From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus Weekend, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. We continue the summer book series, The Storyline, today as we feature an interview from March 8, 2022, with the late Arun Gandhi, author of the book The Gift of Anger and Other Lessons from My Grandfather, Mahatma Gandhi. The figure who represents the American Civil Rights Movement was Martin Luther King Jr., but the figure who inspired Dr. King was India's Mahatma Gandhi. Arun lived with his grandfather for 2 years before the spiritual leader's murder in 1948. Throughout his life, Arun carried on Mahatma Gandhi's legacy of activism, becoming known as the Peace Farmer. He came to the American South and, with his wife, co-founded the M.K. Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. On May 2nd of 2023, he died at the age of 89. Dr. Arun Gandhi, thank you so much for joining us from Rochester, New York, by Skype.
Thank you for having me on the show.
You are the founder of the M.K. Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. You started that institute in Memphis, and then you moved it to Rochester, New York. And I want to acknowledge that you are no stranger to the southern United States.
No, I'm not. I lived in the South for about 20 years, I think.
We need to acknowledge to your listeners that you are the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, Mohandas Gandhi.
I am.
What do you think is the link between your grandfather, his philosophy, and Martin Luther King's philosophy? Because I did an interview at the King Parsonage in downtown Montgomery. You know, he was the pastor of the Dexter King Memorial Baptist Church. In his study, in the parsonage, is a big picture of your grandfather. Tell us about that link.
Well, it happened in 1959. They didn't really meet personally. My grandfather was already assassinated by the time Dr. King came on the political scene. So in 1959, after the Montgomery bus boycott, he was invited by the Indian government to come to India and meet with people who had lived with Gandhi and worked with Gandhi and learned from them the philosophy of nonviolence. And so he accepted that invitation and came over and spent a few months in India visiting people and talking to them and going to many of the memorials that are there in Gandhi's memory. One particular one that really was a very touching experience was there's a house in Bombay City which was used by grandfather when he came to Bombay, and that house has now been turned into a museum, and the room that my grandfather occupied is furnished in the same way as it was during his time, but it's kind of blocked. People can't go inside the room. They can look into the room from the plate glass windows. And so when Dr. King and his party came over there to see the museum and he saw that room, he requested the director permission, special permission, to go in and sit and meditate for a while. So because he was a state guest, the director obliged him but said that only he could go in, nobody else would be allowed to go in there. And so he went in and he sat there and he dismissed the rest of the party and he said, I'll catch up with you when I'm done here. So they all left and he sat and meditated. And then it was time for the museum to close, and he was showing no signs of coming out of the room. So the director went to him and asked him, when are you planning to leave? We want to close up and go home. And he said, I'm not leaving. I'm going to stay here. I'm not done yet. So the director was shocked and she said, this is a museum. You can't spend the night in the museum. We don't have all the facilities here. And besides, you are a state guest and you are booked to stay in the Taj Mahal Hotel, which is the best hotel in town. So he said, I don't care. He said, as long if Gandhi could stay here in this room, I can stay in this room. And if he could sleep on the floor, I can sleep on the floor too. And he said, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying the night here until I'm completely done with my meditation. And he did spend the whole night there. And he came out the next morning and he said, now I feel spiritually strong enough to go back and lead my people in the struggle for civil rights. So that was the connection between the two. They didn't meet personally, but it was that spiritual connection.
You know, Dr. Gandhi, we are in something that you started. And it starts on January 30th. It runs for 64 days. It is a special season of nonviolence. Tell me about that season of nonviolence and why you did it in this manner.
Well, it was, I started the institute in 91 in Memphis, Tennessee. And soon I realized that it was in 98. Was going to be my grandfather's 50th memorial anniversary. And I was thinking of ways in which we could celebrate this anniversary meaningfully. And while going through that whole process of thinking about it, I realized that in the same year, it was Dr. King's 30th memorial anniversary. And I thought it would be a very appropriate thing to link the two anniversaries and call that 64-day period a season for nonviolence and just inspire communities everywhere to do whatever they could within their means to take us a few steps closer to the dream that both of them shared, the dream of creating peace and harmony in society. And I went out and talked about this, and people just loved the idea, and it kind of took a life of its own. And now it is being celebrated in more than 900 cities around the world. It's gone beyond the U.S. I had thought it would be just that one-year celebration, the 50th and 30th anniversaries, but people said, no, we want to make this annual celebration, and so it's become an annual feature now.
Both your grandfather and Dr. King were murdered. They died by violence from other people.
Yes. Yes, they were both. Unfortunately, that has been the case all along. You know, we have been killing people who talk about peace and change, and it's very sad, but this is where we are.
Dr. Gandhi, you have agreed to do a series with us here at Troy Public Radio, and we've about run out of time for our first program. So can you join us for another?
I will, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the late Arun Gandhi speaking with us in March of 2022 from Rochester, New York, before his death on May 2nd of this year. Dr. Gandhi continued the humanitarian work and activism of his grandfather, Mahatma Gandhi, throughout his adult life. Among Arun Gandhi's books are Legacy of Love, My Education in the Path of Nonviolence, and The Gift of Anger and Other Lessons from My Grandfather, Mahatma Gandhi. Thanks for joining us today for our book series, The Storyline on In Focus Weekend, which is now a podcast on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up, We'll talk to Troy Public Radio's operations manager, Kyle Gassett, about his reporting for NPR on this week's surprising Supreme Court ruling in the Alabama redistricting case of Allen versus Milligan. That's ahead on In Focus Weekend, so stay with us. From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus Weekend, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Now that we're in June, it's the traditional time for the Supreme Court to release some of its most important decisions. On Thursday, a ruling in the Allen versus Milligan case was announced, and it had major implications for the Voting Rights Act passed in 1965 following the Selma to Montgomery March. Troy Public Radio's operations manager and news director, Kyle Gassett, was tapped to report the story for NPR's Morning Edition and Daily News podcast, Up First. Today he joins me to discuss his reporting and what he's learned about the ruling and its implications. Kyle Gassett, thank you so much for joining us on In Focus Weekend.
Thank you, Carolyn, for having me back again.
I was listening to you on NPR this morning, and what a report you had for the listeners across the United States about the latest ruling from the Supreme Court about Alabama's congressional districts. Can you give us a recap?
Sure. And I was just mentioning to our colleague, Michelle Mowry, yesterday how we really need to block out weeks in June just to be ready to spring into action, because those are the times in which the Supreme Court hands down decisions and you never know what you're going to be called into doing. But yes, as you mentioned, we got the news yesterday that in the Milligan versus Allen case that the Supreme Court had issued a ruling and they had upheld key parts of the Voting Rights Act, in particular the redistricting provision, in which they basically told the state of Alabama that, and the Republican majority legislature that had formulated a new congressional district map after the 2020 census, that it wasn't going to work, that it wasn't compliant with the Voting Rights Act, and that they were going to need to go back to the drawing board and redraw again. And this time take into account race whenever they are putting these districts together. And since Alabama's population is 27% African American, they need to take that into account. And instead of one congressional district out of seven that is majority Black voters or Black residents, it's going to need to be two congressional districts, Carolyn. So that's going to be a large change in the state.
Kyle, there were some politics going on in the Supreme Court decision. I think a lot of people were surprised to see that Brett Kavanaugh weighed in on this, on the side of having another district. And Justice John Roberts wrote the opinion. So a couple of surprises there.
I think a lot of folks that I interviewed yesterday, well, it was very interesting because I mainly spoke with Democratic operatives. The Republicans were pretty much silent on the issue. There were some statements that were released yesterday, but I mainly spoke with folks from the Democratic side of the divide. And I think that they were, if there was any surprise, it was because in the past, the Supreme Court had issued rulings that had, in a sense, gutted other parts of the Voting Rights Act, in particular preclearance, which is a way in which cases involving voting disputes that were related to race or to anything that was delineated in the Voting Rights Act prior to this had been taken care of before they made their way into court. That's what preclearance was all about. That had been gutted basically out of the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court. So there were a lot of people, and given the tenor of the questions and the way that the case went from everything that I've researched, I think people were anticipating that the way it was argued last year, that it was going to end up where this particular provision had been taken out as well, or had been basically gutted as well. But that's not what happened yesterday, and they upheld it.
Kyle, I noticed in your NPR report that this has wider implications. You mentioned in that report that there are similar court challenges in Louisiana, in South Carolina, in Georgia. The end result of all of this could be possibly adding Democratic strength nationally.
Yes, Carolyn. Yesterday, I actually spoke with somebody who talked about this issue, and she's the executive director of the Alabama ACLU. Her name is Jatan Bosby-Gilchrist, and here's what she had to say.
So essentially, this will impact other states, Louisiana being one of them. So Alabama's case was selected to be argued at the Supreme Court, but this impacts several other states in this region. And what's most important, partisanship aside, is that communities are represented by people who can advocate for them at every level of government. From the congressional level to the state legislative level, that's what's most important, and that's what this decision further reinforces.
And Kyle, I noticed in reading up on this that Congresswoman Terry Sewell of the 7th Congressional District has described the current situation as black voter dilution. So she applauded the Supreme Court decision. And I guess the follow-up question on everyone's mind would be, where would this new district be?
Well, as listeners heard, if they heard my report this morning on Morning Edition or on the Up First podcast, I spoke with Joe Reed, who is executive director of the Alabama Democratic Conference, and they already have a map in place that does create those two districts. And Senator Marika Coleman actually proposed that map in the legislature a few weeks back or a few months back. So it has already been formulated and put together, and they were ready in case this particular decision went the way it did yesterday with a map that already has that in place. Now, that may not be the map that gets adopted, and they're going to try to go to the legislature and try to have this particular map adopted. But if it's not, they said they're going to go back to the courts and see if the courts will weigh in on it.
Kyle, you mentioned that Alabama has 27% of its population African American. And when you look at the population distribution map in Alabama, a lot of the black population is across Alabama's Black Belt, that rich area of Black Belt soil. But will the new congressional district correlate with that population distribution, or do you know? What did Mr. Reed say about that?
I have to say, given the speed at which I was reporting yesterday, I wasn't able to examine the map and kind of go into the details of what he has laid out there. But I do think a lot of that particular portion is going to be the area that they're targeting, just kind of visually when you look at the map. But, you know, there's all sorts of things to take into account. And one thing, Carolyn, that I thought that was interesting that Joe Reed said yesterday was that he believes these new maps will work better for Republicans because it will make it easier for them to appeal to their voters, maybe in other districts. So he sees this as a win for the other side as well.
Well, thank you so much for keeping the listeners up to date here on In Focus, and as well the folks nationwide with your NPR reports. And it's very enlightening, and it's moving fast. So thank you so much for your reporting, and thanks for sharing that with us today.
I'm happy to do it, and I will just go ahead and put a plug in to say that none of this happens, listeners, without your support. So if you listen to this type of reporting here on Troy Public Radio that we also are able to provide nationwide too, your support helps us do that. So I want to thank the listeners for allowing us to do that, and just happy to say that we can respond here at Troy Public Radio and bring that valuable news and information to listeners not only in our area but around the country and the world.
I second those remarks. That was Kyle Gassett, Operations Manager and News Director for Troy Public Radio. Kyle filed reports on the Supreme Court ruling in the Allen versus Milligan redistricting case for NPR's Morning Edition and Up First podcast. Stay tuned to Troy Public Radio for news updates about that case and other rulings from the Supreme Court. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy In Focus weekdays over the noon hour. And if you're away from your radio, you can download In Focus on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts. This is In Focus Weekend, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison, hoping your weekend is a great one. This is Troy Public Radio.